We're talking with Chandler Gould, of course, exec from the National Association of Wheat Growers. Chandler, glad to have you here in the state of Oklahoma as we get to the middle part of this week. So many challenges for our wheat industry right now. You know, you've got the weather, but can't do a whole lot about that. But yet there are a lot of things going on in D.C. that I know you're paying a lot of attention to, including some of the leftovers from the pandemic funding and more.
Well, you're exactly right, Ron, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you today in Oklahoma. You know, I sat on the Ag CEO Council as a co-chair, and we just met with Secretary Vilsack about 2 or 3 weeks ago, looking at continued issues, not only with COVID and supply chain and the inelasticity that we have in our food system, but also the overflowing impacts that the Russian Ukraine war is having on the growing season here in our U.S. wheat growers, as well as the continued winter drought. And so between the USDA and the EPA and supply chain issues, there's still a lot of stuff for us to cover in Washington, D.C.
When we look at this supply chain issue, in other words, the cost of inputs, really a direct result hitting farmers very hard, and doesn't seem like there's any end in sight.
There, you know, it's really hard right now. One of the main questions I keep getting in D.C. is, you know, we're having historically high wheat prices right now. All of our U.S. wheat growers must be making money. And actually, that couldn't be further from the truth. With the increased cost in input prices, fertilizer, fuel, and the fact that we're also not selling wheat right now and having to explain that 70% of our wheat is winter wheat. It's already in the ground. It's going through a drought. That I think that that's an important concept to make sure that D.C. and the general public understand is that the way our production system is set up, this $10 wheat we're seeing right now is not actually getting back to the individual wheat grower here in Oklahoma or anywhere else in the U.S.
In Washington, there is a lot of talk, obviously, already about this 2023 Farm Bill. We heard Dr. Fisher talk about some of the nuances of that. But, how much of a concern is it for you that we're going to have a hard time getting adequate safety net help in 2023?
Well, I think funding and outlays in the baseline is clearly going to be a significant issue. You know, even though we're having these high prices right now, I really think that we are going to struggle getting a farm bill done in 2023, not only because of the funding issue, because of the price issue, but it's also an election year, a presidential election year, and by the time we roll around the next year. And so I think being able to get the House and the Senate Ag Committees together, I'm very happy to see that they have started their farm bill hearings, but in my honest opinion, they're 6 months behind schedule. This should have started back in January, and I think if you just look at a normal farm bill timeline, since we didn't start until basically April having these hearings, I don't see how you have enough hearings and draft the bill and pass it all by September 30th of 2023, and with the possibility that one or both of the chambers could change majority hands.
And that could change the dynamics tremendously.
It would definitely change the dynamics. It would change the priorities. It would change everything. And so all the work that's been done between now and the election could almost be completely undone, and you have to start back over if one of the chambers does go to the Republican Party.
Your producers across the country, what are they telling you right now that they really want NOG to be working on more than anything else?
Well, when we're looking at the farm bill, it's definitely crop insurance is still going to be our main cornerstone of that risk management tool, but also equity in Title I. And so my quick example is, and I'm making these numbers up just to be clear, but every time we did raise reference price, you know, corn went up 5 cents, soy would go up 4 cents, wheat would go up 1 cent. So the equity in that Title I is not really distributed equally or the way it should be, I think, based on acreage. So I know that's something we're going to continue to look at. And then, of course, you know, we'd also like to see possibly some new research on other uses for wheat besides for feed and fuel, so we could help increase our margins and our demand within our own industry.
And, you know, that whole concept of how we utilize wheat, that brings us to the consumer. And, you know, there's a lot of confusion, if you want to be kind about it, regarding, you know, gluten-free products. That's a rage right now, very big category. And that's got to hurt. That's got to, you know, really impact wheat.
It really does. And, you know, we want to be very sensitive to the portion of the population that does have celiac disease. It's somewhere a little less than 2%. less than 2% of the population has celiac disease. But it's also kind of like families that have a diabetic in them. If one person in your family is a diabetic, the entire family has to adjust their diet. So even though one person may have a gluten intolerant issue, it affects the whole family. But still, when you add that all together, a very small portion of the United States population truly has an insensitivity to wheat and wheat-based products. So continuing to educate that whole grains are an important part of a well-balanced diet as something we need to start teaching them in grade school, so that these fad diets that the celebrities are putting out there do not draw away from the true science and facts of what's considered healthy nutrition.
When it comes to dietary guidelines, were you happy with what came out of the last round? I know already we're starting to talk about the next 5 years.
You know, as long as they continue to push those important emphasis on whole grain foods and whole grain products, we are happy with them. We are a member of the grain chain or coalition that the bakers predominantly lead, but we were pleased with them, and we hope to continue to focus on those whole grains and nutritional foods that are wheat-based products.
Looking ahead. One thing that's always out there is, can we hang on to the acres we've got? We've already had quite a few acres eroded from our base of wheat acres. And there's some inherent problems as far as production efficiencies, production costs compared to some of the other major crops.
You know, until we can get the consumer on our side so that we can adopt innovation and technology into the wheat production system, we're going to continue to lose acres to corn and soybeans who have either GE or GMO events, so that they are less water reliant, more disease resistant. Their margins are getting wider. And without that technology being adopted into the wheat industry and the consumer accepting it, we are going to continue to compete for acres. I do think that we are going to continue on the downward trend on wheat acres in the United States. I just hope we can finally get to a point at some point that the consumer will see the need for us to continue to produce wheat in this country, but it will only be if they will allow us to adopt innovation.